So I welcome all of you to this Sunday Feast program. So we are currently in the Sunday Feast, taking the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter by chapter. So today we'll be discussing the seventh chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is described by Srila Jiva Goswami Pad in his Sarva Samvadini Tika as the Sarva Pramana Chakravarti Bhuta. Chakravarti means emperor. Praman is the means of acquiring knowledge. And Sarva Praman, so among all the ways of acquiring knowledge, this is the emperor. Now, why is it called as the emperor? We can look at it from a very broad point of view. All of us can acquire knowledge with our senses, but our senses can give us very limited knowledge because all of us have four defects. Just like if now the door is slightly open, only as much as the door is open, I can see through it. But if beyond that there is another door, which is also slightly open, then what I can see through it is even lesser. So imagine if there are four small, partially open doors, then although there is a huge world outside, what I could see from here would be very tiny. So like that, all of us have four defects. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, these are described as Brahma, Pramad, Vipralipsa and Karanapata. All of us have limited senses. We can't see that which is very far away. We can't see that which is the closest to the eyes, the eyelid. So the limitations of our senses are like the first closed door, which limit what we can know. Beyond the limitations of the senses, we also have the tendency to be illusioned. Even after we see something, if water is cold, if we have come from a colder place, we feel it is warm. If you come from a hot place, we feel it is cool. So you are illusion. Beyond that, that's another door which is only partially open. Beyond that, there is a third window, or third door, which is our tendency to commit mistakes. And beyond that, there is a fourth window, the tendency to cheat. So, first of all, we can know limited things. Within what we can know, we are put into illusion. Illusion means it's an unintentional, unavoidable mistake. Whereas the tendency to commit mistakes is an avoidable mistake that happens because of oversight. And cheating is an intentional mistake. It's not a mistake, it's an intentional false report. So because of this, the Vedic scriptures tell us that what we can know by our own senses is limited. And therefore, we need to turn to the word of God, the revelation that is given in the scriptures, for us to get the highest knowledge. Now in the Vedic tradition, yes, there are many scriptures. And there are some scriptures which are outside the Vedic tradition also, like the Bible and the Quran. So these are all accepted to the extent that they teach us about the word of God. But if we look at the various scriptures, largely in the Vedic scripture itself, there is Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda and Upasana Kanda. So Karma Kanda means fruitive religion. We practice religion so that we can get some material results out of it. We want material enjoyment, we want wealth, we want power, prestige. So the large part of the Vedic scriptures, and similarly the Bible and the Quran, they are mostly talking about Karma Kanda. Although they hint at the ultimate goal of love of God, that is not their emphasis. So they are mostly practical. You do this and you will get this. You do that and you will get that. So neither the Vedic scriptures, means the Rig Veda, Sam Veda, Yajurveda, Athurveda, they are metaphysical, nor are the Bible and the Quran having much metaphysics. Metaphysics means philosophy. They're basically moral codes, do's and don'ts. If you do this, this will happen. If you don't do this, that will happen. Now, beyond that is the Jnana Kanda, which is the Upanishads, which contains a lot of philosophy. But the problem with the philosophy is that it is often very difficult to penetrate and understand. And that's why the Upanishads are among the most confusing of the scriptures. And those who study the Upanishads are among the most confused of all people. If they study exclusively the Upanishads, we have the Isha Upanishad, which says tadejati tannejati tadure tadvantike tadantarasya sarvasya tadu sarvasya asya bahayata. So it's described that absolute truth. He moves, he does not move. He's close, he's far. He's inside everything, he's outside everything. But how is this possible? So it doesn't make sense. Yeah, so then that is why there are the Puranas. So Srila Prabhupada explains a Vedic aphorism, Purnayate iti Puran. That which gives us the complete message is the Puranas. So the Karmakanda has stories, and the Purana and the Upanishads have analysis. Now, among the Puranas, there are Sattvaguni, Rajaguni, Tamoguni Puranas, which talk about worship custom made for different levels of people. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is Amala Purana, which talks about pure love for Krishna. So now, when there are stories which are like there in the Vedas, they are attractive to people. The Upanishads are more analytical. So the Srimad Bhagavatam combines the story format of the Vedas and the analytical format of the Upanishads and gives us the highest message. That's why, so what I explained briefly is an introductory analysis of what Jiva Goswami gives in his Tattva Sandarbha of why he considers, why the Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be the topmost of all scriptures. Sarva Pramana Chakravarti Bhuta. Now, in the Srimad Bhagavatam itself, as we know, there are 335 chapters, out of which the largest canto, which are divided into 12 cantos, and the largest canto is the 10th canto, which has 90 chapters, by far the longest, largest. The nearest that come to it are the 3rd and the 11th cantos, which have around 30 chapters, 30-35 chapters. So, when Srila Prabhupada went to America, Srila Prabhupada was on a historically unprecedented, unparalleled mission. Now, one person all alone going from the capital of devotion, Vrindavan, to the capital of degradation. That was the New York. You know, and he was going to, for what purpose? You know, not to provide sense gratification to people over there, but to tell them to give up all sense gratification. So it was, you know, even sometimes there are movies which say about Mission Impossible. But you know, what Srila Prabhupada was out to do was Mission Impossible. Now there's a historian of religion, Thomas Hopkins, he writes that, you know, where in the history of the world do we see anything like what Bhaktivedanta Swami has done? He's an old man, goes to a part of the world where he has never been before, meets people whom he has never met before, tells them a message which they have never heard before, and makes them do things which they have never done before. And, you know, what he makes them do is not just crazy things. Actually, you know, people have crazy fashions and they do crazy things. But what Srila Prabhupada made them do was to give up what they considered to be the cherished goals of life. You know, so he says, maybe you can say that what Jesus Christ did was something similar. You know, he also told people, and people just gave up everything and followed him. But he says, still there are differences. You know, Jesus was young, whereas Bhaktivedanta Swami was very old. And Jesus preached in a culture where he was familiar throughout his childhood. Bhaktivedanta Swami went to a culture where he had never been before. And that's why in the earth. So he says this story of Bhaktivedanta Swami's life, he doesn't use the word Prabhupada. Prabhupada is an affectionate word which devotees use for him. Bhaktivedanta Swami's life story has no parallels in world history. Now, one of the early articles about Srila Prabhupada that was published in the newspapers in New York, he says, Bhaktivedanta Swami succeeded in telling the world's toughest audience the message of God. The world's toughest audience. Why? Because the hippies, they were a part of the counterculture and they were out to reject everything. They rejected their families, they rejected their wealth, they rejected their careers, they rejected jobs. Why? Because they were not just rejectors. They were actually rejecting because they wanted something higher. But they were very skeptical of all forms of religion as they knew it. And they were misguided into believing that by drugs they could go high. Drugs were the means to spiritual experience. That's why they got into drugs. And when they got into drugs, drugs gradually dragged them down. And then it is these hippies are described as rebels without a cause and rebels without a pause. That means they're rebelling, but when we rebel against something, we have to rebel for something. But they were rebelling against everything, they had no cause to rebel for. And that's why, because they had no cause, they were rebelling without a pause. Rebelling against everything. But when Srila Prabhupada went there, and he gave them Krishna consciousness, he gave them the chanting of the holy names, he taught them about Krishna. And it was an amazingly large number of people were attracted and they started practicing. So how did Srila Prabhupada achieve this extraordinary result? You know, generally if a warrior is going out on a mission, than the warrior, if he has some weapons, you know, he cherishes the weapon. Have I really carried my weapon? 10 times he will see. So, what was Srila Prabhupada's weapon that he was carrying? Srila Prabhupada, when he was on Jaladuta, the ship which carried him to America, alone in his silent and personal prayers to Lord Krishna, wrote the Markine Bhagavata Dharma song, which describes his prayers seeking the Lord's mercy to preach the Bhagavata Dharma. And in those prayers, Srila Prabhupada quotes the entire section of verses from the second chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, beginning with Shrunavatam Sukatha Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada's prayers are the personification, epitome of selfless compassion. He's an old man going all alone to a distant country without any money, without any contacts, without any organizational support. He's not asking God, please help me get some roti kapda makan. What is he asking? Please make me an instrument of your compassion. And what is Srila Prabhupada praying? My dear Lord, now all of these people, they are covered by the modes of passion and ignorance. Normally when an Indian goes to America, you will think, oh, this is a land of prosperity and enjoyment. But Prabhupada did not see prosperity and enjoyment. He says, Rajastamo bhava esabai achana. They are all covered by the modes of passion and ignorance. Prabhupada had a complete philosophical vision, Shastra Chakshu. But then he said, Shune Bhagavata Katha Yadi Bara Bara. If one keeps hearing the Bhagavat again and again, Dhira Hoya, one will become sober. So Srila Prabhupada's plan was to speak the Bhagavatam. And by hearing the Bhagavatam, the modes of passion and ignorance will subside. And one will be able to become sober. And after one becomes sober, then one can relish Krishna consciousness. So this was Srila Prabhupada's plan. By speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, he would make... So he certainly chanted Hare Krishna, which is the culmination of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. But along with that, he spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. That was his plan. And if we look at when Srila Prabhupada, in his final days, November 14, 1977, he departed. So the last conversation that he had, the last dictaphone talk that he gave, what was that? Prabhupada said the same thing. That, you know, the modes of passion and ignorance are very dangerous. And we should stay in satsanga. We should stay in the association of devotees and hear and chant about Krishna. Then we will make spiritual advancement and we'll go back to Godhead. But Srila Prabhupada had the same consistent message right from the beginning to the end. In fact, Srila Prabhupada waited in 1960, when he published the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto. He at that time published it in three parts. So he had to do a Herculean effort to not only write, to type, to proofread, to transport the paper, and then to procure the funds. And 1962, he published the first volume of the first canto. 1963, he published the second volume. 1964, he published the third volume. And when all the three volumes of the first canto were ready, then he felt, now I am ready to go and preach. And so now, if you read the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find that Srila Prabhupada gives the English translations of a lot of verses there without quoting the verses themselves in Sanskrit. In the later cantos, he quotes a lot of Sanskrit verses and he gives the Sanskrit also, the Devanagari also. Because when Srila Prabhupada was himself typing, you know, he had one typewriter. The typewriter was English. And when he had to type, he could type English. And then if he had to type a Sanskrit verse, he had to shift the paper from one typewriter to another, insert in the exact position. For Srila Prabhupada, it was very difficult. It was a labor of love. You know, so he did that. And later on, when he had devotees to assist him, disciples to assist him, then Prabhupada said, we have to insert the Sanskrit verses also, the Devanagari also, because that is also purifying. So Srila Prabhupada, at that time, when he started off with the Srimad Bhagavatam first canto, he felt that everything that I want to give is in essence over here. And that's why the first canto, if we study systematically, you know, we can get a deep understanding both of the message of the Bhagavatam and the compassionate mood of Srila Prabhupada, by which he has given us the Bhagavatam. So, in the seventh chapter, so before we go to the seventh chapter, quick recap. The first chapter starts by describing the, it has the invocation prayers and the questions by the sages. And the second chapter is the chapter of, which is from which Prabhupada quotes the maximum verses, the maximum number of times. In his lectures, conversations, books, letters. Then the third chapter describes how Krishna is the source of all incarnations. And that is, Krishna is the ultimate goal, that is told right away. Second chapter tells, bhakti is the ultimate sadhan. and Krishna is the ultimate sadhya. And then fourth, fifth, sixth chapters describe how the Bhagavatam originated. Of course, the Bhagavatam Jiva Goswami describes as eternal scripture in the spiritual world. It is Channa Shruti, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Channa Avatar. He's a hidden incarnation of Krishna. So similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam is Channa Shruti. It is, appears to be a smriti, it appears to be a Purana, but it is eternal scripture which is there in the spiritual world, eternally. So, just like there's a drama script. So, when the drama script is there, then the script remains the same, but different actors may perform the drama at different times. So, like that, you know, we can say, how can the Bhagavatam be Shruti? Shruti means that eternal words which never change. So, actually, the Bhagavatam words never change, but in different yugas, there are different souls who take the role of Shukadeva Goswami, who took the role of Parikshit Maharaj, who take the role of Maitreya Rishi or Vidura or whoever. So, it's like a drama script which remains the same, the characters keep changing. So, the Bhagavatam is an eternal scripture. But in this material world, how it originated is described in the 4th, 5th and 6th chapters where Narad Muni instructs Vyasadeva. You have given these gargantuan Vedic scriptures. 1 million verses is the estimate of what they are. 1 lakh verses. It's huge. But he said, where is the ultimate conclusion given? So, please focus on that ultimate conclusion. And so, after giving this instruction, there is a discussion and then Narad Muni departs. So, 7th chapter begins by the inquiry from Shaunak Rishi to Suta Goswami. So, after Narad Muni departed, what did Vyasadeva do? So, Suta Goswami describes that Vyasadeva did what a disciple should do after the spiritual master departs. That is, departs means goes to some other place. He says, follow his instructions. So, actually in the 5th chapter, 13th verse, Narad Muni describes that Urukramasya akhilabandha hetave samadhina anusmarav cheshtitam. That Supreme Lord whose pastimes can free one from all material bondage. In samadhi, meditate on those pastimes. So, Vyasadeva went on the banks of Saraswati River and sat down in meditation. So, Jiva Goswami in his Bhagavad Sandarbha describes that this trance is going to describe in summary what the Srimad Bhagavatam is going to teach fully. So, he does an elaborate analysis in the Sandarbhas of what the essential message of the Bhagavatam is. The word Sandarbha means to weave. So just like, you know, if you have a cloth, you take some extra cloth and weave a design on it. So like the Sandarbhas, they weave the design of the scriptural conclusions by taking the thread of the verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So there he emphasizes these 4 verses which come in the 7th chapter of the 1st canto, 4, 5, 6, 7 verses. So there he describes what does Vyasadeva see in meditation. The first thing he says is, Bhakti yogena manasi. With his mind, by practicing bhakti yoga, what does he say? Apashyat purusham purnam mayam chitapashrayam. He sees that Parma Purusha, that Supreme Lord. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who is one of the most prominent and outstanding commentators on the Srimad Bhagavatam in our Sampradaya, described that he saw Krishna and he saw all the amshas and colors of Krishna, all the incarnations, the Purusha Avatara, the Guna Avatars. And then separately, he saw the Mayam Chitadapashrayam. He saw the Maya Shakti. So the Maya Shakti is considered to be separate from Krishna because she is his separated energy. Separated energy. Once Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture in America. At that time, one young lady asked him a question. Swamiji, if Krishna is so beautiful, then why is this world so ugly? Why is this world so cruel? If Krishna is so good, why is this world so bad? So Prabhupada replied, Prabhupada had a way of making philosophy unforgettably presentable. So Prabhupada replied, you are beautiful, but your stool is not beautiful. So why? Because it is your separated energy. So Prabhupada said, this world is like the separated energy of Krishna. Separated energy means what? That we have come away from Krishna, we have separated ourselves from Krishna by our free will, and because we have separated ourselves from Krishna, so everything that is disconnected from Krishna loses its beauty. Of course, there is some apparent beauty that is there temporarily, but that disappears very quickly. So he saw that Maya was under the control of Krishna. Apashraya means it was behind him. Vilajyamanaya yasya sthitam. In the second, third canto, it described that Maya, she feels so shy that she doesn't even want to come in front of Krishna because she's doing a thankless task of reforming the conditioned souls. And then as he meditated further, then he saw, yes, there is the Supreme Lord and there is the Maya. So the Supreme Lord is here and Maya is under his control. But under the control of the Maya is the living entity. Yaya sammohita jiva atmanam trigunatmakam paropi manute nartham tatkritam cha bhipadyate. That soul, jivatma, who is transcendental, he thinks of himself to be material. And because he thinks of himself to be material, he acts accordingly and gets bound by Maya. Now how does that happen? How can the spiritual soul think of himself to be material? That is by misidentification. Just like if people go and watch a movie. Now when they are watching a movie, they identify with the character in the movie, the hero, the heroine, whoever is there. And then if the hero is beaten up by the villain, they feel as if they are beaten up. And if the hero is beating the villain, they beat the neighbor also. And they get beaten up. What happened? So basically, by identifying with the character in the movie, people experience the emotions which are going on the movie character, which is actually just a projection, an illusion. But because of misidentification, the audience experiences the emotions which are actually not, which are not factual, because nothing is happening to them. So sometimes people ask devotees, you know, why don't you go to and watch movies? So actually devotees' answer is, all movies are actually second-hand enjoyment. What do you mean by second-hand enjoyment? Now somebody is enjoying on the TV screen or the movie screen, and the whole audience is imagining, if I was there, it would be so nice. Isn't it? It's all second-hand enjoyment. On the other hand, when we come to the temple, it is we who sing and dance. It is not that we watch others sing and dance. It's first-hand enjoyment. So, but what happens is the soul identifies with the body. And because of that, everything that happens to the body, it appears as if it's happening to him. And depending on the strength of the misidentification, the emotions that occur are that much greater. So that's why when we become detached from the material world, even in this world, the miseries become much lesser. So after seeing how the soul, so the Supreme Lord is here, so Supreme Lord is here, Maya is under his control, but the living entity is also meant to be here, he has come here, and he is now controlled by Maya. Then he starts thinking deeply. So Vishwanatha Chakra Thakur describes that Vyasa, this meditation is like the meditation of a physician, of a doctor. And if you go to Ayurvedic doctor, now he'll test the pulse. And while testing the pulse, he will close his eyes and concentrate. Because he's trying to diagnose what is the disease. So like that, Vyasadeva is diagnosing what is the cause of suffering of all living entities. And what is the means for their deliverance? So then he has understood the suffering is because they are under the control of Maya and they are misidentifying themselves with what they are not. And what is the way out? He says, yes, it is Bhakti Yoga. Anarthopashamam sakshat Bhakti Yoga madhokshaje Lokasya jananto vidvams Chakre satvata samhitam. So people do not know that just by hearing about Krishna, by practicing Bhakti Yoga, one can become free from all sufferings. Now we may wonder how, just by practicing, there are so many practical problems which I have. I have so many family problems, my health is a problem, my job is a problem, this problem, that problem is there. How just by practicing Bhakti Yoga, some chanting, some hearing, how the problems will go away? That he described in the next verse. Yasyam vaishruyamanayam Krishne paramapuruṣe bhaktir utpadyate pumsam shokamoha bhayapaha. So shruyamanayam, when we hear about Krishna, what happens by that? Krishne paramapuruṣe, that Supreme Lord who is Krishna, bhaktir utpadyate pumsam, by hearing about Krishna, our bhakti awakens in our heart. And when that bhakti awakens in the heart, Shoka moha bhaya apaha. So lamentation, illusion and fear, these three go away. Actually these are very precise emotions. Why? Because lamentation is about the past. oh, this went wrong, that went wrong, that went wrong. Illusion is about the present. If this will make me happy. This is like this, this is like that. It's all illusion. And bhaya is about the future. So he's saying all the causes of suffering with respect to the past, the present, and the future go away. Now, how do they go away? Just by hearing? Actually, the soul who is misidentifying with the body is in a state of forgetfulness. So our situation is like a amnesia. All of you know about, there are movies which show somebody falls from a big mountain top or something, and he falls into a valley. When he falls into a valley, you know, if he falls in a sand dune or something like that, he just falls unconscious but doesn't die, and then tribals come around. And, you know, who are you? I am. Tumhara naam kya hai? Mera naam yaad nahi mujhe. I don't remember my name. Then the tribal look around, you came from so high, we don't know where you came from. You stay with us, we will give you a name. We will give you a name, and we will give you a role, and we will give you a goal. So the same thing happens with us. The soul comes from the spiritual world to the material world. And then society uses a name. Now all of us identify with our name so strongly. So sometimes if there's some common names. You call that name, sometimes 10 people turn around. Who is it calling me? Because we identify so strongly with our name. But our name came into existence after we came into existence. And that's why people can change their names and still remain the same also. So we are not our names. Our name is something which society has given us. We are distinct. So now suppose this person who has fallen from a mountain top, he's a prince. But now he's staying among these tribals in the valley who are all woodcutters. And he's going around cutting wood, struggling. You know, his hands are aching, his back is paining, and he's suffering. And then his father comes searching along. Where is my son? He comes along. And says, oh, my dear son. What son? Whose son? He doesn't identify. So Krishna comes, sarva dharman paritta jamam ekam sharanam raja. Give up, surrender to me. Why should I surrender? We don't recognize only. So then, the father, so when a person is suffering from amnesia, there are two alternative treatments. One is called the stimulus treatment. Stimulus means, do you remember this pen? Do you remember this watch? Do you remember this shirt? Do you remember this car? And slowly that person's memory starts coming. But sometimes the person is not ready to cooperate. Don't waste my time. I don't care about the shirt and pen and watch or anything. Just get out of me. I don't have time. So then the father doesn't want to. But the father goes to a doctor. And the doctor comes along and then he gives a shock treatment. Do you remember this pen? I don't have time. Get out of my way. Okay. Catch him and tie him up and give him a... Do you remember this pen? Yeah. So, you know, Krishna doesn't want us to suffer. But when you don't cooperate, when we don't, all of us have fallen from the spiritual world and have lost all our memory. Now Krishna comes and gives us spiritual stimuli. He gives us the deities, he gives us the holy name, he gives us the scriptures. If you say, I don't have any time. So then what happens? Then Krishna has to use shock treatment. So one of our devotees from Pune, he had gone to Gujarat and he was trying to preach to his relatives there. But they were not interested. So he was in Gujarat at that time. You know, I think 3.5 years ago, there was a big flood in Gujarat. So what had happened was the dam was almost overflowing. And the authorities were fearful that the dam may break. And if it breaks, it would cause huge devastation. So they decided to open the doors. But their plan was to send a message to the people so that the people can evacuate. But you know how the Indian bureaucracy works? Before the messenger came, the water came. And they were at this house talking, and they suddenly looked out of the window and huge water coming. They were on the third floor, they went to the fourth floor, the water kept rising. They went to the fifth floor, and then they went to the terrace, and the water was rising. And then this devotee told, now we have to take shelter of Krishna now. They said, yes, what else can we do now? So they started chanting, Now they had two great fears. One was, what if the water rises to the terrace? And second is, even if the water doesn't rise, if because of the sheer impact of the water, if the building collapses. So they started chanting, and they were practically doing kirtan for 24 hours.
And after that, the water went down, and all the relatives became 16 rounders after that. All of them became devotees. So,
sometimes Krishna has to use shock treatment. But Krishna doesn't want to. Just like the father doesn't want to. So, here Vyasadeva is describing not the shock treatment, but the stimulus treatment. So, if you just hear about Krishna, what happens by hearing about Krishna? Bhakti rutpadyate pumsam. Our attraction to Krishna awakens. And when our attraction to Krishna awakens, we start experiencing real spiritual emotions in relationship with Krishna. And when we experience those divine emotions in the relationship with Krishna, then the material emotions become peripheral. They are there, but they become peripheral. They become peripheral. Peripheral means they don't affect us too much. Just like if a student goes to a college, and if he's not a very serious student, then always be wondering, hey, this hostel accommodation is not so good, the food is not so good, this is not good, that is not good. He'll always be complaining. But if the student is fixed in his studies, and he says, now I have come here for what purpose? To study. So yes, if I get good food, good accommodation, that's all fine. But if I don't, now this hostel where I'm staying is not my permanent residence. I'm here for a particular purpose. So the more he starts focusing on his studies, the more the other details don't matter. Yes, he senses this food is not so good, this accommodation is not so good. But that doesn't preoccupy his mind. Because his mind is preoccupied with his goal. I have come here for study, and if I study well during this temporary period, then I have a much better life ahead of me. So like that, when we don't have a spiritual goal to our lives, then all our material situations affect us too much. I am not so wealthy, I am not so good looking, I am not so this, I am not so that. So, but if we are fixed, this material life is temporary. And if I just study, if I apply myself to the practice of Krishna consciousness, I go out of this world and I return it to eternal life. Then, these material events, yes, we are aware of them, but they become peripheral. They don't affect us so much. That's how shoka moha bhaya apaha. All the illusion, lamentation and fear, they go away. So, actually, if anxiety goes away, anxiety, do all of us have a worry time every evening? 7 to 7.30 is worry time. No, we don't have a worry time, but worry is like a constant background noise that is going on, sucking our mental energy. Sucking our mental energy. But if we develop faith in Krishna, then we understand Krishna is there as a protector. Then the worry just goes away. So that's why, even from a practical point of view, if we develop our faith in Krishna, our mental energy gets so much conserved and utilized. So, this is what Bhagavatam describes. By hearing, this is what will happen practically. Then, after that, Vyasadeva, when he understands this, so Chakravarti Pad describes that when a father gets something very wonderful, he wants to share with everyone, and especially he wants to share it with his son, so that he can carry on the legacy. So, immediately Vyasadeva, when he gets this clear understanding through the mercy of Narad Muni, and through the vision which he has got, he thinks, yes, let me share it with my son, Shukadev. So Shukadev Goswami is a Brahma Jnani. He's a Brahman realized person. And he has got in deep meditation. And Vyasadeva sent some of his followers into the jungle. And they go into the jungle, and in the wood cutter, he starts singing the verses of the Bhagavatam, especially the verses describing Krishna's beauty from the 10th canto. And Shukadev Goswami is sitting in dhyan, meditation. He's sitting in dhyan, but he becomes disturbed. Not by material desires, but by spiritual desires. What is this beautiful sound? He goes and asks, Brahma Vivarta Puran describes the story. Where did you hear this from? He says, I heard it from your father only. My father? He never told me this. He immediately goes to his father and asks him. And then Vyasadeva narrates the whole Shrimad Bhagavatam to Shukadeva Goswami. And Shukadeva Goswami, because already free from all material desires, he immediately grasps it. And then it is described that he recites it to Parikshit Maharaj. And when in the 12th canto it is described, when he is reciting to Parikshit Maharaj only, he says that he, among this audience, here is the Shukadeva, he is the Suta Goswami. And in the future, he will speak it to many others. So now, that incident will come later. Shukadeva Goswami will appear in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the last chapter. But now Suta Goswami is speaking over here. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is like nested conversations. Now sometimes in computer you have nested loops, one inside the other. So like that. Right now the conversation that is going on is between Suta Goswami and the sages. So then Suta Goswami starts describing, this is how Shukadeva Goswami got the knowledge. So generally, if many times before, if in the ancient, in the medieval or the ancient novels that were there, you know, lot of, before the real action of the novel starts, a lot of background of the characters is given. So sometimes if it, not much action is happening, but it's the build up for the actual novel. So what is happening in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is, the two main protagonists, the two main characters of the Srimad Bhagavatam, how they came about, how they met, and how they started discussing is described. So here, Suta Goswami very briefly describes how Shukadeva Goswami got the knowledge. And now he will shift the focus to how Parikshit became in a situation where he wanted that knowledge. And so he starts from there and he goes to the end of the Mahabharata war. One of the questions by the sages was also, please describe the pastimes of Krishna. So, so Suta Goswami very intelligently views together the question which the sages have asked and the direction towards which he wants to take the audience for ultimately describing the conversation, replicating the conversation of Shukadeva Goswami Parikshit Maharaj. So he starts his narration of the pastimes of Krishna after the Mahabharata war is over. And after the Mahabharata war is over, so he describes that, or that the Kauravas had been defeated, and then Ashwatthama, so it is described Krishna and Arjuna were on their chariot, and then they got the news that that's Ashwatthama had actually very ruthlessly killed the Pandava warriors, the warriors who were in the side of the Pandava army, not the Pandavas, and their sons. So here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna enters for the first time, and Krishna enters as Yatra Achyuta Mitra Suta. It is described that he was that Achyuta, that Arjuna. So first the focus comes on Arjuna. And Arjuna is the Mitra. Who is his Mitra? And Suta, his friend and charioteer, that is Achyuta. So the entry of Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam is very similar to the entry of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita in the 14th verse of the first chapter, Krishna comes in focus. And Krishna's entry is very sweet and dramatic. Tataha shvetair hayair yukte mahate syandane sthitau madhava pandavaschaiva divyau shankhau pradatmato. It's like sometimes in a movie, a hero is about to enter. So then maybe he's coming in a car, the car zooms by and the brakes screech. And then you see the feet coming out and then you move up and you see the face. So like that, it described. Tataha shvetair hayair yukte, beautiful white horses are there. Mahati syandane sthitau, there's a magnificent chariot. Madhava pandavaschaiva, there's Madhava, there's Krishna, and there is Pandava, there's Arjuna. Divya, so first they describe the setting, then the person, and then the action. Divya shankhau pradatmatu, they blow the conch. Similarly, it is the same setting. Krishna as Parthasarthi, as the charioteer of Arjuna. That same setting, that is the entry of Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So of course, there's a twist over here. Generally, if a hero is going to enter, now the hero will come out of the car. You won't find the hero coming as the chauffeur of somebody else. But that is Krishna, who is Bhaktavatsala. He comes as the charioteer of his devotee. So this image of Krishna as Bhaktavatsala is the underlying theme of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. So what it starts with, Krishna's Bhaktavatsala, will be discussed canto after canto after canto, and it will culminate in the 10th canto, where Krishna is completely conquered by the love of the Vrajavasis. And then, when the Pandavas get the news of how Ashwatthama had so ruthlessly killed sons of their sons as well as the other warriors, Draupadi starts crying bitterly. And Draupadi starts crying bitterly, then Arjuna takes a vow. He says, you know, that wicked person, that wicked Brahma Bandhu, the relative of Brahmana who has done this heinous act, you know, he will have to pay for this. And he sets off. So then, as Arjuna is charging towards, Ashwatthama is very fearful. And far away from the distance, he sees Arjuna and Krishna coming. And immediately, he starts running away on his horses. But his horses are completely exhausted. And then he realizes, I'm helpless. I don't know what I should do. And then he takes up his Brahmastra to try to shoot at Arjuna. Now, actually, here, in this particular, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the focus on Ashwatthama comes for the first time. And because Srila Prabhupada is so deep in everything that he does. Now, in the seventh chapter of this particular chapter of the first canto, he calls it not Ashwatthama punished. He titles it as the son of Drona punished. Why son of Drona punished? Because that is very paradoxical. It's a Brahmana and a Brahmana's son. The whole pastime is, if it were an ordinary criminal, he would have been punished very easily. But because this particular person was the son of an exalted person, so how can he be punished? That's why Srila Prabhupada doesn't use the title Ashwatthama punished. Son of Drona punished. That's the title he uses. So, now a little background about Ashwatthama. Now, Ashwatthama was a very beloved son of Dronacharya. In fact, Dronacharya was a very exemplary Brahmana. He was a Brahmana in the sense that Brahmanas have all Vidya. Brahmanas not only have spiritual knowledge, they also have martial knowledge. But Brahmanas generally don't use the martial knowledge. They train the Kshatriyas in that martial knowledge. But because of circumstances, that's a long story, Dronacharya became the teacher of the Pandavas. And that was because he was very poor and Ashwatthama, as a child, was crying out of hunger. So then he became a teacher and he got a lot of wealth and opulence by that. And as they grew up, he was training the Pandavas and the Kauravas and he was also training his own son Ashwatthama. And he had a soft spot for Ashwatthama. So, when there would be many stories are described. So, he tried to train Ashwatthama in the best possible way. Ashwatthama was also very, very valorous, very competent. But he was not as competent as Arjuna. And because Dronacharya was a little attached to Ashwatthama, so he, although saw that Ashwatthama was not so competent, still he decided to give him the Brahmastra. So, now, he was not competent means what? Not that he did not have the skills. He did not have the qualities. So Krishna says, Chaturvarna Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhaga Shaha. Guna is the qualities and the karma is the skills. So for anybody to do any job properly, he needs to have the qualities and the skills. So for example, if somebody is a surgeon, so this caste system is highly misunderstood and misrepresented. It is not meant for discrimination. It is meant for cooperation. Because different people have different talents and different specialities. And when everybody is engaged according to their talents and specialities, then they are themselves satisfied. And also, society gets the best use of their talents. It was never meant to be by birth. It was meant by qualities and skills. So, to understand this logic of the necessity of qualities and skills, let's take the example of a surgeon. Now, surgeon, if he has to do surgery, has to have the necessary skill to actually cut the body, it's very delicate, cut only the right walls and not the wrong walls and the wrong veins. It's very skilled. But along with the surgical skill in operating the scalpel and the other surgical instruments, he also has to have the quality of compassion. People are suffering and by surgery I should relieve them of suffering. But instead of compassion, if he lacks that quality of compassion, has instead greed, then the patient, when the patient goes to the doctor, Sarva dharman parityajya, doctor ekam sharanam raja. Practically surrender to the doctor. I just give up everything. Doctor says, eat this, don't eat this. Okay. Karishye vachanam tava. I will do whatever you tell me. The patient does that. Actually, when a patient goes to a doctor, he has to actually almost something like put blind faith. So the patient puts faith in good, entrusts his life to the doctor in good faith. The doctor is greedy. He opens the stomach for surgery. He does surgery in the stomach and steals the kidney from there. And the patient, he will suffer all the more. So the doctor, he may be a very good surgeon. But along with the surgical skill, he has to have the quality of compassion. If he doesn't have the quality of compassion, his skills will actually cause more suffering because people will get attracted to the skills and because he lacks the qualities, people will suffer the more. So Ashwatthama had the skills. He was an expert archer, but he lacked the quality. So what was the quality that he lacked? He lacked the farsightedness, that a Kshatriya should have, the far-sightedness, by which one can see long-term things. So that's why he was, throughout the Mahabharata, we see Ashwatthama is very impulsive. He acts on the rush of the moment. So, and Dronacharya knew this. Dronacharya was a good teacher. He knew that Ashwatthama lacks that Brahmanical quality of far-sightedness. But still, he gave him the knowledge of the Brahmastra. Because he thought, he told him, don't use it to attack anybody who's unarmed, but you can use it only for your self-defense. And because he wanted his son to be protected, so he gave him that knowledge. And Ashwatthama, he used that knowledge, and basically Ashwatthama and Arjuna were friends in the Gurukul when they were there. But Ashwatthama always felt a little jealous towards Arjuna because he found that because he was the son of the teacher, son of Dronacharya, he was the natural object of affection. But he could not get the affection of his father because of his expertise in archery. That his best student was Arjuna. That's why he felt a little jealousy towards him. And of course, he also became friends with Duryodhana because of circumstances. And in fact, both father and son decided to fight on the side of the Kauravas in the battle. So now, in the battle, so Ashwatthama had this background and he was very competent. In fact, he's one of the Maharathas who is talked about by Duryodhana when he's assessing the forces also. And the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, as well as in the Uttarkhand of the Mahabharata. Not Uttarkhand, in the Bhishma Parma, when the Bharvi is having assessed. So at that time, as the battle proceeds, in the Mahabharata, the battle goes on for how many days? 18 days. So in the 18 days, first 10 days, Bhishma is the commander. The next 5 days, Drona is the commander. The next 2 days, Karna is the commander. And the last day, Shalya is the commander. Of course, after that, you know, for the last battle, Dronacharya anoints Ashwatthama as the commander. We'll come to that gradually. So when Drona was the commander, on the 12th day, they conspire and have Abhimanyu killed. On the 13th day is the day of total devastation for the Kauravas because Bhima, Arjuna and Satyaki completely break their ranks. And Arjuna even avenges the death of Abhimanyu by killing Jayadrath. And after that, the whole Kaurava ranks are devastated completely. And Duryodhana is crestfallen. He's just holding his head. How could it have happened? One day, Bhima is so angry. Bhima in one day kills 30 of the brothers of Duryodhana. And on that day, Arjuna kills 2 Akshahunis. Now, of course, we may think, what is this killing? But actually, in the presence of Krishna, on the battlefield, whoever dies, they get liberated. Netrai pibanti nayana abhirama. Netrai pibanti. All the warriors, they were drinking with their eyes. Nayana abhirama. That Lord who is the pleasure of the eyes. Abhiram is the pleasure. Nayan is the eyes. So, because they were all liberated in Krishna's presence. So, but that was a day of total reversal. And Drona becomes crestfallen. He fights with despair. Ashwatthama comes by his side. But Ashwatthama gets wounded and departs. And then, Krishna arranges through Bhima to have Drona get the news that Ashwatthama is killed. So Bhima goes and tells, Ashwatthama is killed. What Bhima does is, he goes and kills an elephant of the name Ashwatthama. And he kills the elephant. He shouts loudly, Ashwatthama is dead. Ashwatthama is dead. So Drona's heart trembles when he hears this. But he thinks, no, I have given the Brahmastra to Ashwatthama. He cannot die like this. And he says, this Bhima is cunning. He can lie also. Then he keeps fighting, but still his heart is quaking under him while fighting. So then he sees Yudhishthira in the distance. And Krishna goes to Yudhishthira and tells him that before the battle itself, actually before the battle, see the battle of Kurukshetra is very different from the modern battles. The modern battles, you know, the success is considered to be attacking and killing innocent people. Whole terrorism, you know, just killing innocent people. But the Vedic culture, it was not like that. You know, even in Virat, when Arjuna comes, he gives up his disguise as Brihanallah and he comes and starts fighting. And when he first sees Dronacharya, Bhishma and Kripacharya in the distance, he shoots arrows. And the arrows go and fall at the feet. So 2 arrows at the feet of each of the elders. And Dronacharya sees the arrow at his feet. He raises his hands in blessings. He's pleased to see Arjuna. And he's very pleased that Arjuna is seeking blessings. So he calls out to his warriors. Oh warriors, yes, it is indeed Partha over here. And be ready to fight with full vigor. Because his next two arrows are not going to seek blessings. These arrows are seeking blessings, but the next arrows are not. So similarly, before the battle starts, Yudhishthir goes to all the elders. He goes to Bhishma, Drona, Kripa and Shalya. And he seeks their blessings for fighting. And he seeks their blessings. Actually, it's a very tearful scene in the Mahabharata. We read it. Actually, both sides are in tears. Because there is a knot of love, affection which binds all of them. But the knot of politics is ripping that love apart. And you know, when Yudhishthira goes to Bhishma, he's in tears. Bhishma is in tears. And he has to ask. He has to ask Dronacharya, please bless us so that we can fight. He says, yes, my blessings are with you. Thank you. So Dronacharya, all of them say, you know, we are very happy that you came and sought blessings. If you had not come to seek blessings, then I would have cursed you and you would have been defeated. So then Yudhishthira's heart becomes all the more heavy. He knows. He says, please. So Dronacharya says, please ask for some blessing. Because you have come so graciously. So he says, his heart is heavy. He says, please tell us. You know, you are an undefeatable warrior. Please tell us how we can defeat you. So it is described, Arjuna laments, the Kshatriya Dharma is so ugra. You know, that one has to fight against one elders also. So Dronacharya at that time says that, you know, oh Yudhishthir, I am undefeatable. As long as I have raised my weapons and I am fighting, nobody can kill me. But on hearing a disagreeable news from a trustworthy source, I will give up my weapons. And at that time, I will be killed. At that time alone, I will be killed. So in that sense, all this is ordained. And Dronacharya also knows about it. So he goes to Yudhishthir. Dronacharya goes to Yudhishthir and he asks him, what happened? Is it true that Ashwatthama is killed? So Krishna tells Yudhishthir that now is the time for us to finish this battle and stop this bloodshed. You know, as long as the Acharya is there, you know, we cannot win this war and the bloodshed will go on and on and on. So for the protection, for the minimization of the violence, please do what is needful. So for Yudhishthir to tell a lie is very, very difficult. So actually the Vedic culture is very profound. Now some people say, you know, that actually Kauravas also were liars and Pandavas also liars. Both of them lied. So they're not one is better and one is worse. Actually, it's not like that. The Pandavas also, we say that they sometimes use unethical means. But what is most important is the purpose. You know, the purpose, for example, you know, now we have this huge corruption scandals going on where all the politicians are lying. And that is a lie. And if the child is not taking medicine and a mother puts the medicine tablet in the sweet and gives. And what is this? This is a sweet. It is medicine? No, it's not the medicine. Sweet, take it. So that lie is not out of malevolence. That is out of compassion. So, you know, what happens in modern society is people try to absolutize values. So truthfulness is an important value. But it's not an absolute value. The absolute value is Sarve Jana Sukhina Santu. Let all people become happy. And the way all people can become happy is by turning to Krishna, become devotees of Krishna. So what was required for the establishment of dharma was necessary to be done. So then Yudhishthir hesitantly says, Ashwatthama hato hate, narova kunjarova. He cannot speak a lie. So he says, Ashwatthama is killed, but not the man, but the elephant. But as he speaks narova kunjarova, Krishna blows his conch shell. And as he blows his conch shell, Dronacharya doesn't hear that part. And Dronacharya becomes crestfallen. And then when Dronacharya falls eventually, it's a long story, then the Kauravas just run away in helter-skelter, fear. And as they're running away, Ashwatthama was wounded, is coming back. And Ashwatthama hears that this whole disaster has happened and his father is dead. He gets outraged and he says, today, with the weapons which my father has given, I will kill the murderers of my father. Come, and today will be the end of the battle. And all the Kauravas are disheartened. They come with Ashwatthama at the lead. And Ashwatthama takes out the most powerful astra, more powerful than the Brahmastra also, the Narayanastra. And with the Narayanastra, he starts shooting. And this arrow has such a mystical power that one arrow expands. And it starts devouring the entire battlefield with fire. And the Narayanastra has a characteristic that whoever opposes it, it becomes the extent of the opposition that is there, that much stronger it will become. So those who try to shoot arrows, not only are their arrows devoured, but they are also devoured. And nobody is able to fight. And Yudhishthir becomes panicky. Yudhishthir says, Yudhishthir is almost like an eternal pacifist. He never wanted the war, but he was forced to fight. So he says, you know, oh soldiers, this war, this weapon is impossible to resist. So please flee. And I am renouncing the kingdom and I will enter into the fire. And Krishna tells him, don't panic. He says, I know what to do. So he says, this weapon cannot be countered, but it can be evaded. He calls out to all the warriors. Now, take off your weapons and lay down on the ground. This is the weapon, Krishna doesn't say, I am Narayan. This is the weapon of Lord Narayan. The only way to deal with this is to bow down to Lord Narayan. So, all the warriors obey Krishna. Even Arjuna puts his bow down. Now, Bhima is trying to fight. He's very angry that his whole army is being devastated and he's fighting and suddenly finds nobody is there fighting. He looks, everybody is lying down. He says, what has happened? He gets so angry and he looks at Arjuna. Arjuna has also put his bow down. So, Arjuna, what happened to your vow? Never to get down the Kandiva. If you are afraid, wait. I will show my prowess and destroy this weapon today. If you don't want to fight, I will win the victory today. So, actually he starts fighting. Now what happens is, there is no other enemy, so the entire strength of the Narayanastra gets concentrated on Bhima. And Bhima's whole body starts burning. You know, he appears like a second sun on the battlefield. But you know, this sun is not just giving light, he's getting burned by the light also. So, Arjuna shouts to Bhima, no, I have taken a vow never to raise the Gandiva against the Brahmanas or the Lord of the Brahmanas, Narayan. And this is Narayan's weapon, therefore I will not use it. He says, stop, put down your weapon also. Bhima doesn't hear only, keeps fighting, but his whole body is getting burned. And Arjuna, seeing the predicament of his brother, he shoots a Varunastra, and Bhima's whole body gets covered with water. And he looks around, gets a temporary relief, and then Krishna runs over. And Arjuna, Bhima is still angry. Arjuna right runs over and takes away his weapons from him. And Krishna catches him and pushes him down. He says, what are you doing? So Krishna tells, you know, this weapon cannot be countered. He says, you are a Kshatriya. Victory in a battle is not just a matter of strength. It is a matter of strategy. Go down. And then he forces Bhima down. Bhima is, you know, trying to resist. But he has also realized, although he has huge power, there are times when he has got overpowered in the past also. So he knows, although Kshatriya thinks his power is the greatest, but he has seen Hanuman's power, he has seen Nahusha's power. So he realized, this power I cannot overpower. So actually, you know, in life, there are situations when fighting is not the best solution. When just bending down is the way we move forward. So this is in practical material life also, and even in devotional life. Yes, we have to fight on, but how to fight is a matter of strategy. Srila Prabhupada was preaching in India, but when it didn't work, he did not just keep trying preaching in India, just left India and went to America. So a temporary cessation is not defeat, it's a matter of strategy. So then the Narayanastra gets, because there's no enemy, Narayanastra disappears. And then the Pandavas get up, and they're all ready to fight. And Ashwatthama is enraged, and Duryodhana thought the water is over now today. He looks around, he says, oh, Ashwatthama, shoot that arrow again and kill the Pandavas. So Ashwatthama looks dejected. He says, you know, I had the power to send that arrow, Narayanastra, only once. But don't worry, I have many other weapons. I will fight. And he keeps fighting very fiercely. And he tries especially to kill Drishtadyumna. But he's countered slowly. Then he's so angry. He starts killing soldiers. Ordinary soldiers are not meant to be killed by chariot warriors. The idea is, the battle is between equals. So the Vedic culture, battle is like a sport. In a sport, you know, it's a matter of skills. So a chariot warrior is supposed to fight with a chariot warrior. And a foot soldier is supposed to fight with a foot soldier. Like actually, Drona himself breaches the etiquette when in frustration he starts killing many foot soldiers. And that time the sages come and tell him, you are fighting irreligiously. And because of this religious fight, you will have to die. Lay down your weapons. And he's thinking whether he should lay down the weapons or not. At that time, he also gets the news that Ashwatthama is killed. So actually, Drona also, it is described, because of the bad association of Duryodhana, Drona also lost his sense of ethics. So Ashwatthama also starts killing. So then Arjuna comes to him and he says, why are you killing weak warriors? Here I am, ready to curb your pride. Fight with me. And they start fighting fiercely. But Arjuna is more than a match for Ashwatthama. Then Ashwatthama, in despair, uses another celestial astra, which is a Bhargavastra uses. And it starts devastating the Pandava army. But Arjuna uses a Brahmastra and counters that. And then when he sees both his best weapons countered, and Krishna and Arjuna still peacefully there, Ashwatthama gets totally frustrated. He throws aside his bow and arrow, jumps down, and says, everything is illusion, and runs away. And he runs away. And he runs away from the battlefield. And Duryodhana's main hope now is Ashwatthama. He sees Ashwatthama running away, he also runs away. And then as Ashwatthama is running away without his chariot, he sees Vyasadev coming over there. And he immediately offers obeisances to Vyasadev. And he asks, you know, how is it that my father was killed? How is it that the Bhargavastra and the Narayanastra, both of them were countered? So Vyasadev says, and actually, that person whom you call as Keshava is the Lord of the Narayanastra, he the Supreme Lord Narayan. In fact, Narayan is his Amsha. And there is, as long as he is in the chariot of Arjuna, there is no hope for victory. And actually, the victory of the Pandavas is ordained. When Ashwatthama hears this, he becomes a little sober. See, maybe Krishna is really God. He starts thinking. Actually, there is this constant shift that among the Kauravas, sometimes they start accepting Krishna as God. But the attachment is so great that they just can't accept it. It doesn't stay in their mind. So Ashwatthama, if Krishna is God, then what is the use of fighting? No, but why will God fight against me? He cannot be God. He comes back to fight again. But then we know that Karna falls and then Shalya falls. And then even Duryodhana is defeated. When Duryodhana is defeated, at that time Ashwatthama comes finally on the 18th day. And he says, alas, you who are the king of the world is now lying on the earth helplessly. How perverse is destiny. So Ashwatthama is still angry. He says, you know, I will avenge this death. So Duryodhana tells Kripacharya, bring some water and I will anoint Ashwatthama as the commander. And he anoints Ashwatthama as the commander and all of them are depart towards the battlefield. Now actually the 18th day is almost, 18th day is over now. And the Pandavas think the battle is won already. But they decide, they're all exhausted by the day's fighting. So they decide to take rest. But Ashwatthama is not able to sleep. As he's lying down, he, restlessly moving around while lying down, he looks up in the tree that is under which they are sleeping. And he said, it's a huge tree. And on that tree, there are many, many crows which are sleeping. And suddenly he sees a huge hawk swooping down. Tack, tack, tack. It pecks and kills the sleeping crows. He just kills the sleeping crows. And as he sees this, you know, his evil intelligence gets the idea. He says, this is how I should take revenge. He says, this is the sign of destiny. He starts thinking. So then he wakes up Kripacharya and Kritavarman, who are the two other warriors, and he says, this is what I saw. Similarly, those evil Pandavas, we should go and kill them. So Kripacharya and Kritavarman are horrified. They said, what you are talking about is even unthinkable. How can we go and kill sleeping warriors? It's against all codes of morality. So Ashwatthama is very angry. He says, what code of morality did our opponents follow? If they did not follow any morality, then we will also not follow any morality. So Kripacharya says, no, you are known as a glorious warrior. Now, if you do this heinous act for all of eternity, your ill fame will be talked about by people. Please desist this thought. He says, I am happy to see that you are determined to fight. Tomorrow, after all of us are rested, we will go and fight. And with you so determined, we will do our best. And who knows, we may even win. So Ashwatthama is too determined. He says, no, I am going right away. So here, you know, actually in life, wrong things happen to everyone. You know, evil happens to everyone. From this life's point of view, life is not fair. Now we say, okay, so we see innocent people who get victimized, who get diseases, who get wrong things happen to them. So the whole Vedic literature is talking not about life being unfair, about how to respond to life's unfairness. So if you want to talk about unfairness, it was not only Ashwatthama with whom there was unfairness. With the Pandava, there was the greatest unfairness. Now, they were virtuous and still they were persecuted. They were dispossessed of their kingdom. Their wife was disgraced. They were haunted. They had to hide like fugitives in the Agyatvas. So the Vedic literature, especially the Itihasas and the Puranas, they teach us how to respond gracefully to suffering. You know, how to respond gracefully to suffering. The Pandavas, at least when we suffer, we can know that, okay, it's my own sins because of which I am suffering. But for the Pandavas, they are great devotees. What sins are there? And if you talk about Lord Ram, you know, he had to go into exile. He's the Lord himself. What sin does he have? But the scriptures illustrate how, if there is suffering also, how to respond righteously to suffering. So that's why Ashwatthama's argument is that, you know, because they have dealt unfairly with us, so we should deal unfairly with them. That is a false argument. Because this life may be unfair, but our test is whether we respond fairly to it. So Ashwatthama goes about, and as he's going along, he suddenly sees a frightening, huge being. That being has a big head. The loins are covered by a tiger skin. The upper part of the body is covered by a deer skin. And in the face, there are hundreds of eyes. And in the darkness, that being is luminous. Now Ashwatthama is fearless. He takes his bow and arrow, starts shooting. Starts shooting the arrows. That being has a huge sword in his hand. Shooting the arrows, and all the arrows just go into that being's body and just disappear. Disappear, disappear. And all his weapons are exhausted. And Ashwatthama, he sees that, he look at the being more carefully, he sees that there is a snake around his neck and his body like a sacred thread. And then he realizes, this must be Mahadev. This must be the god of destruction, Shiva. And he thinks, you know, that this Mahadev must be protecting the Pandavas. And he must have come to know my evil intentions. And that's why he has come to punish me. And he becomes very fearful. And he falls down and offers obeisances. So Mahadev tells him that the time of all the warriors has come. And therefore, you want to kill them? Here is this weapon. Take this massive sword and go and kill them. And as that Mahadev disappears from there. And when he disappears, as soon as he takes that sword, he feels a surcharge of power in his body. He feels as if he's become 100 times more powerful. And he starts off. Now, somebody may say that, okay, if Mahadev gave that weapon, Mahadev only empowered him, then was it that Ashwatthama is not wrong? No, actually, even if somebody does something wrong, yes, whenever, if say, there are two people, A and B, so A murders B. Now we can say that B is killed because of his own past bad karma. That is true. But A doesn't have the right to become the instrument of the bad karma of the reaction. Just like we say that, you know, we should not be angry with the instrument of our own karma. If somebody is chastising us, somebody is misbehaving with us, we should not be angry with the instrument of our own karma. But the perverse interpretation of this is, we become angry with others and tell, don't become angry because I am an instrument of your karma. That is complete philosophical misunderstanding. The Vedic culture is about whether we can make the right choices or not. So here, Mahadev only empowered him because he had the desire. So who is responsible? It is Ashwatthama who is responsible. But Ashwatthama had the desire, and those warriors were supposed to die, but Mahadev would have done that by his own means. But because Ashwatthama chose to have that evil desire of killing them in such a brutal way, Lord Shiva gave him that weapon. And then he went there and he went straight to the camp of the Pandavas and started ruthlessly killing everyone. He killed Dushtadyumna by kicking him with his shoes, and he went to the one camp where there were five brothers sleeping. He went and just brutally killed them by ripping their stomachs. And then he went around and started killing everyone. There was pandemonium in the camp. People were screaming and crying. And then when finally he came out, those who escaped, Kripa and Krutavarman had come there, and they had also lost their good sense because of Ashwatthama's evil resolve. And they started ruthlessly killing those who were fleeing. And in a short time, everybody was dead. And when he comes back, to the tent where those five bodies were lying, he comes, and by that time, early morning has come up. He wants to take the heads. He thinks, I have killed the five Pandavas. and looks at the heads and he's aghast. Actually, they are not the Pandava, they are the Pandava's sons. Krishna is prescient. Krishna knows in advance. So Krishna tells the Pandavas that after we have won the victory, the code of etiquette, the victory code says that the victorious warriors should rest on the battlefield as a symbol of their triumph. That's why the Pandavas, Krishna, Satyaki, these seven are sleeping on the battlefield. And whereas Ashwatthama goes into the Pandava camp. So the Pandavas are not there only. And he realizes he's killed the five Pandava sons. And he thinks, you know, I wanted to please Duryodhana, what should I do? He then makes another plan. He takes those heads and he tells Duryodhana. Now Duryodhana is lying on the battlefield. And you know, there are hyenas and jackals who are coming to eat him up. And he's wounded, he's trying to shake them off. You know, and then Ashwatthama comes and drives away all the animals and he tells, and I have killed all the Pandava warriors, including the Pandavas. So Duryodhana is overjoyed. He says, you have achieved for me what Bhishma, Drona, Karna could not achieve. Very glorious. I'm very, very grateful to you. And he says, here are the heads as a trophy. And Duryodhana can't believe it. He takes the heads, and as he takes the heads, he presses them. And when he presses, they just crumble into powder. He says, alas, he says, these cannot be the heads of the Pandavas. They are the sons of the Pandavas. They are the heads of the Pandavas' sons. Alas, O Ashwatthama, what have you done? They were the only survivors in our dynasty. By killing them, you have ended the Kauru dynasty. Alas. And saying this, Duryodhana dies. And now Ashwatthama is doubly devastated. First is that he has already killed all those warriors. And what happens is, as soon as he finishes the killing, he loses that power. He starts feeling physically no longer that powerful. His guilt starts coming in. And now he sees that I'm not even pleased Duryodhana. So he's become very fearful. He's a fugitive. And it's in this situation that he's running away. And when he's running away in this way, at that time, he throws a Brahmastra. He throws a Brahmastra at Arjuna and Krishna. And Arjuna, what does he do? Arjuna sees Ashwatthama is very far away. Arjuna starts seeing this huge effulgence coming up. And he immediately starts praying to Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho. Bhaktanam Abhayankara, you are the one who protects your devotees. So, everybody is burning in the fire of material existence. And you save everyone from that fire. So please, he offers 3-4 prayers and he says, please save us from this fire of this unknown fire. What is it? So Krishna tells, Chakravarti Pasa, you don't recognize this is the Brahmastra. So, and he said, counter it with another Brahmastra. Now, somebody may wonder if a weapon is coming, how can Arjuna turn and offer prayers to Krishna? Where is the time when a weapon is charging to offer prayers? But actually, you know, we live in a culture where most people are highly non-philosophical. But for people whom philosophy was a deeply ingrained part of their lives, at that time, they can just naturally speak philosophy. Just like, you know, when a boy and a girl are together. A boy on the spur of moment speaks some dialogues. Now, where does he get those dialogues from? You know, yes, Maya empowers him. So, because he wants it, Maya empowers him. So, based on the desire, Maya empowers him. So, like that, you know, Arjuna is with the Lord, and the devotee always wants to glorify the Lord. So, immediately he gets empowered and he speaks those verses. Krishna tells him, this is the Brahmastra, kill him immediately. He's countered with another Brahmastra. So, Arjuna sips sacred water and then he shoots, and it's described the fire that spreads everywhere. It's like the fire of the destruction of the whole universe. And Arjuna withdraws both the weapons. And then Ashwatthama is completely powerless. He runs and catches him. And then, as he's caught him, Krishna incites Arjuna. He says, don't spare him, kill him immediately. And actually, Vishnu Chakravarti describes that Krishna is testing Arjuna. He's testing Arjuna to illustrate to the world the level of consciousness, the level of standard of justice of his devotees. And this is a common strategy that is used by Krishna when the gopis come in the Ras Leela. So Krishna tells them, actually, you know, you should go home and serve your family members. That is your duty. Now that is the duty, but there is a higher duty. So in the 29th chapter, Krishna tells the mundane dharma. That is in the Ras Leela. The 47th chapter, when Uddhava Sandesh comes, I'm talking about 10th canto now, there he tells, actually, you are feeling separation from me? But separation is impossible because I am present in the hearts of all of you. So just think of me within the heart and you will experience my presence. And in the 82nd chapter, when the meeting is there in Kurukshetra during the solar eclipse, Krishna tells, actually, I am the Ahamatma Gudakesha. Very similar verse like the Bhagavad Gita was coming. He says, I am the soul in all living beings. Basically, he's telling the gopis, you know, he's giving them Brahma Gyan. We two are one. So the gopis say, all this may be true, but this doesn't satisfy us. You come back. So actually, Krishna is testing. So Krishna tests like this. So why? Because he wants to, in one sense, glorify his devotees. Or at least he wants to increase the rasa with his devotees. In the 9th canto also, the 9th canto ends. In a few verses, Shukadeva Goswami describes all the pastimes of Krishna. To see whether Parikshit Maharaj is eager or is tired. And Parikshit Maharaj says, why you describe so briefly? Please describe in detail. I'm not at all tired. So he's testing. So like that also, 12th canto, in the 5th chapter, when he gives Brahma Gyan. After giving the Gyan of Bhakti, he gives the Gyan about Brahman. And he tests him. Has he really understood Bhakti to be the conclusion? And then, that is the nearest that Parikshit Maharaj comes to almost chastising Shukadeva Goswami. He says, you know, after glorifying Bhagavan, why are you teaching me about Brahman? So he says, so actually he's teaching just to test him. Just to test. So, you know, this is how Srila Prabhupada would also train his disciples. You know, he would test them sometimes by giving them some instruction of one level, and when they would, this is not proper, then he would give them higher instruction. So last year, when I was editing His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj's new book, so I had that privilege. So after the editing was over, we had to do a last proofreading. So Maharaj told me that that tomorrow we have to send the book to the publisher. So please, so can you do one proofreading, last proofreading? So Maharaj told me around 9 o'clock. He says, tomorrow morning around 10 o'clock we'll send the book. So I started thinking, there are 300 pages in the book. How can I proofread 300 pages in 12 hours? And it's night time also. I said, Maharaj, I'll try. Then I started the proofreading. Whole night I was doing. Then morning also I was doing. Maharaj called me around 4 o'clock. Have you done? So I didn't know what to say. There are 300 pages. I had completed around 240 pages. So I said, Maharaj, whatever I complete, I'll give you. So then I gave it to Maharaj. And then the next morning, the book got a little delayed. So then I told Maharaj, there are some more corrections to be done. Some more spelling mistakes. So Maharaj said, okay, you tell me, I'll do it in my computer directly. So then I was doing all the corrections and Maharaj was typing in his book. At one time, there was a spelling, Bhakti Siddhanta. So it was, spelling was slightly wrong. S-I-D-D-H-A-N-T, it was S-D-D-H-A-N-T. So I told Maharaj, the spelling needs to be changed, Maharaj. Maharaj said, Hari Bol, you passed the test. I was surprised. I said, what happened? Maharaj looked at me and said, I had put the spelling like that to see if you'll find out doubt or not. So I was completely befuddled. I didn't know what to say. And seeing my face, Maharaj said, don't worry, I was just joking. So till this day, I don't know whether Maharaj was joking or what. But I do know one thing, that when we are doing our service as a spiritual master, we should not take things for granted. So he describes that Krishna is actually testing Arjuna. So Arjuna takes the bound Ashwatthama back to the Pandava camp, where all the Pandavas are there and Draupadi is there. And now here we see Draupadi's extraordinary reaction. Draupadi is completely grief-stricken because of the death of her beloved sons. And when she sees the killer of her sons coming, you know, she actually folds her hands and offers obeisance and says, please release him, please release him. You know, he's a Brahmana. And she starts giving many reasons. He says, oh Arjuna, he says, you learned the knowledge of shooting weapons from his father. So therefore, please release him. So the implication is that he's telling that if he had not taught you that knowledge, then you would not have been able to arrest him. So how can you use the knowledge which his father has taught against his beloved son? And he says, actually, we see the sympathy. He says, no, I am suffering from the bereavement of my sons. Please don't cause his mother to suffer similarly. Please release him. So she gives a list of reasons. And you know, here we see Draupadi is not just a vengeful lady. She's so thoughtful and sensitive. Philosophically also astute. She gives a lot of reasons. But after that, immediately, when she speaks in such an extraordinary way, immediately Nakula, Sahadev, Yudhishthir, and all the others also agree. Yes, we should not be killed. But there's one person who doesn't agree. Who's that? Bhima. He says, what kind of Brahmana is this? You know, he killed children at night. He deserves to be killed. He deserves to be killed. So then Krishna is described that Krishna suddenly is a Chaturbhuja. He's had four hands. So why? Because Draupadi is telling don't kill, Bhima is telling kill. So he's separating both the parties. So he manifests two more arms to separate the two parties. And he tells Arjuna, so Arjuna, you have been told, you have taken a vow that you will avenge the death of the sons of Draupadi. So you have to fulfill that vow. At the same time, you also have to follow the scriptures when they say that Brahmana should not be killed. So now please decide what to do. So now actually Krishna is telling, and Arjuna has faced a similar crisis. See, there are two kinds of crisis. There is moral crisis and ethical crisis. Moral crisis means this is, one choice is moral, another choice is immoral. Just like if a student is giving an exam, and at that time, he has an opportunity to copy from some other student. Now, should I copy or should I not copy? That's a plain moral crisis. This is right, this is wrong. So the Ramayana presents as moral crisis. You know, Ravana was attracted to Sita. And everybody's telling him, don't go there. But he said, no, I will go. So he made an immoral choice. But, so moral crisis just requires some willpower, some determination to make the right choice. But ethical crisis means there are two choices and both appear right. Both appear right. That means, for example, there is a story in the Puranas where there was a Brahman who had taken the vow always of speaking the truth. And also, so one day he was sitting in meditation under a tree where those crossroads were there, and he saw a cow fleeing in terror. And he saw the cow fleeing in terror, and then he saw a butcher whirling a sword coming behind. The butcher asked, have you seen this? Have you seen a cow? Now he didn't know what to do. The Brahmana should protect the cow, and Brahmana should speak the truth. So they are both are right. There's no wrong choice over here. Both are apparently right choices. So he decided to maintain his vow of truthfulness, and he pointed with his hands. And then, after that butcher went and slaughtered the cow. And then it's described in the next life, because he pointed with his hands like that, his hands got cut. The long story comes. But the point is, ethical crises are much more difficult to deal with. Because there are two choices, both of which appear right. And at that time, one has to understand which is the higher principle and which is the lower principle. Which is the higher dharma and which is the lower dharma. And that, so resolving ethical crisis does not just require willpower, it requires wisdom. It requires scriptural wisdom. So here, amidst all this power and bloodshed which is happening, you know, Arjuna is faced with an ethical crisis. What should I do? Both choices from a Kshatriya point of view are, a Kshatriya should respect the Brahmana, should never attack the Brahmana. From a Kshatriya point of view, if somebody is aggressor and killing, he should be punished. So what should he do? So Arjuna has already faced an ethical crisis like this at the start of the Bhagavad Gita. There his ethical crisis was between Kshatriya Dharma and Kula Dharma. Kshatriya Dharma said that anybody who is an enemy, who is an attacker, who is a wicked person should be killed. Kula Dharma says that one's family member should never be killed. So at that time Krishna has already taught him the principle. What is the principle? Actually, Kshatriya Dharma is better, Kula Dharma is better. That is an irresoluble conflict. The Krishna has solved the sole solution. Sarva dharmān parityajya māṁ ekam śaraṇam raja. Do what will please me. And Krishna wanted him to fight, so he fought. So he understood the heart of Krishna. And what he decided was that Ashwatthama had a jewel on his head. And because the jewel was like a crown on his head, and manina murdhimanam is described. On the murdhna, on the head, the money was there. Because it was on the head, it represents the head. And Krishna has described to Arjuna already in the first chapter of the second chapter of the Bhagavata, sambhavitasya chakirtir maranadati ruchyate. For one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. So Arjuna, understanding Krishna's heart and Krishna's instructions, cuts off that crown. And he releases Ashwatthama. So actually here, there was this conflict between mercy and justice. The mercy says, so Draupadi's voice was the voice of mercy, just forgive. And Bhima's voice was the voice of justice, punish. So what should be done? Now there are no, the scriptures don't give us ready-made choices by which we can avoid thinking. In fact, the scriptures force us to think. In fact, that's why Mahabharata is much more difficult to understand than Ramayana. And that's why the Srimad Bhagavatam is even more difficult to understand than Mahabharata. Why? Because the Mahabharata is about politics. And sometimes in politics, morals can be sacrificed. But the Bhagavatam is about pure devotion. And in pure devotion, you know, Krishna goes and steals butter. You know, when the Western scholars came to India for the first time, they saw this beautiful picture of Krishna. It's a small, tender-looking boy. Now, who is this? It's God. God. Now, they had the idea of God, the person who sits in the clouds and throws down thunderbolts on the sinful. And you know, they just got an intellectual short circuit. How can this be God? And what is he doing? What is he doing? He's stealing butter. Oh, that was the biggest culture shock. First of all, how can God steal? And even if he has to steal among all things, why butter? Why butter? So, actually the Mahabharata describes how there is higher morality and lower morality with respect to diplomacy. But the Bhagavatam describes how there is a higher morality and lower morality with respect to love. And without that love, one cannot comprehend the Srimad Bhagavatam at all, without that loving vision. So here, this particular ethical crisis is resolved by Arjuna in a very insightful way. And similarly, the same theme of always trying to satisfy Krishna. That theme will be illustrated again and again in the Srimad Bhagavatam by how Prahlad Maharaj goes against his father, how Bali Maharaj goes against his guru, how the Vrajvasis, the gopis, they apparently go against Sri Dharma and they go out to satisfy Krishna in the dead of the night during Rasleela. Why? Because Haritoshanam, the satisfaction of Krishna. That is the supremely important criteria. And the Srimad Bhagavatam, by revealing this as the ultimate truth, that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and when we satisfy him, everybody becomes satisfied completely. Savai pumsam paro dharmo yato bhakti radokshije ahaituki aprityahada yayatma suprasidati. The heart becomes completely satisfied. So this is the illustration which the Srimad Bhagavatam teaches. So I'll tell one real life story of ethical crisis and conclude this class. You know, some of you may be knowing this also. Oh, just as devotees are preaching all over the world. So, you know, one of the our devotees are preaching in America also. So there was an American army man who became a devotee. So when he became a devotee, you know, he was in the army, he became a devotee, he became initiated, and then America declared a war against Iraq. And he was sent to Iraq. Now he was thinking, I'm a devotee, it's Partha Sarthi Prabhu. His spiritual master gave him a very appropriate name. Partha Sarthi Prabhu. So he said, he thought, how can I go to the war? You know, this is a political battle, I can't go. So he had this crisis. As a warrior, as a profession, he's supposed to go. But as a sattvaguni person who doesn't want to fight, he didn't go. So he asked his spiritual master. So spiritual master said, no, if you are in the, if that's your duty, you have to go. So he went there, and when he went there, you know, he actually, because the Americans had better technology, and they had, so the Afghani rebels were cornered. And they were using guerrilla warfare to attack. And that's why all the American warriors were suffering, soldiers were suffering from nerves. Very nervous. But you know, he said that I was chanting Hare Krishna for several years, but in the war fields of Afghanistan, I discovered how wonderful the name of Krishna is. This is because, you know, he was with a gun, Krishna, 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 Krishna. He's chanting. And he found that the name of Krishna gave so much shelter. And he had great clarity of mind. And there were several close calls. But by his presence of mind, he was able to guide his platoon to safety. And after one particular narrow escape, it was a successful expedition, but he had a narrow escape in it. One of his soldiers asked him, sir, how do you stay so cool in such tense situations? And then, as he was about to answer the question, the answer came within his heart. Why Krishna sent him to Afghanistan? Why Krishna sent him to Iraq? He says, he had tried to preach to his colleagues in America. But when they were comfortable, nobody was ready to listen. But now, because they were on the border of life and death, so he told them, you know, I am fearless because I know that I'm not the body, I'm the soul. And you know, when the soul is immortal, and when the soul is connected with God, then there is complete fearlessness. They were really hearing because they saw that he was fearless. And then how do you remember all this philosophy that you're not the body or the soul? See, you don't have to remember that, you can realize it. Is how? By chanting. And there you give them, talk to them about the holy name, and they became very inspired. And then It's not that constantly they had to fight, so they had their encampment where they would stay. And he was a good singer, so he started having musical evenings. So three evenings, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, he would have Hare Krishna kirtans. And many of these, you know, you have seen American soldiers in their green uniform, they would come and dance and sing in the kirtans. And every time they had to go for an expedition, he would give a pep talk. So he got an inspirational talk. We are not the body or the soul, we are soul. Life or death, let us remember Krishna. Then all these soldiers with their helmets and their bayonets and their guns and their uniform, they would come. And they would bow down and then he would sprinkle Gangajal on all of them.
And then, eventually,
as he was staying there, you know, he got an idea. Yeah, the American camp was quite big and the American soldiers didn't also have much recreation. So he decided to do Rath Yatra over there.
So, actually, in the Islamic world, they don't allow practice of any other religion publicly. So it's very difficult to do Rath Yatra. But the first Rath Yatra in the Arabian world happened in the American encampment in Afghanistan. And the Jagannath, there was a small chariot. And all the American soldiers were dancing and singing and they were pulling the chariot. So, actually, sometimes when these ethical crises come, we would feel that if these problems don't come, it's better. But these problems, when they come, they take us deeper in our Krishna consciousness. And when we go deeper, we can experience deeper realizations of Krishna consciousness. And deeper ecstasies come to us also. And we can share that with others also. So Srila Prabhupada has given us this very wonderful process of Krishna consciousness. And the more we practice it, the more we'll realize it. And when more we realize it, the more we'll relish it. And then we can joyfully march forward, trying to do as much good as is possible for others. And ultimately, return back to the lotus feet of Sri Radha Gopinath. So I'll quickly summarize. We started by talking about the overview of the position of Srimad Bhagavatam, how we have four defects, like four successive partially open windows, and that's why we need Shastra to know. And among the Shastras, the Srimad Bhagavatam integrates the best of everything. It has the stories of the Puranas and the Itihasas, of the Karmakanda section also, and it has the metaphysics, the philosophy of the Upanishads integrated together. And then we discuss the importance of first canto, how for Srila Prabhupada, the Bhagavatam was the weapon with which he was going to transform people's hearts, and that's what he did. And then we discussed the overview of the first six chapters rapidly, and in the seventh chapter especially we discussed how Vyasadeva's vision led him to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam. He saw the Supreme Lord, Maya, and living entity below Maya, but the living entity can go out of Maya and back to Krishna by Bhakti Yoga. And then how that narration of Srimad Bhagavatam starts, he describes how Shukadeva Goswami got the knowledge, and then he will going to describe how Parikshit Maharaj is going to seek that knowledge. And in that connection, we discussed the pastime of Ashwatthama in detail, and we discussed how in there are times when bowing down is the best strategy to keep going ahead. With respect to Narayan weapon pastime, we also discussed how, you know, others may have done wrong and they may deserve the reactions, but if we become instruments, then we are responsible. And also that life is unfair, is evil to everyone in one sense. But the important thing is not that we respond to unfairness with unfairness. We respond with integrity, with dharma. And that's what the Pandavas illustrate. And then we also discussed about that, lastly about ethical and moral crisis, and how by going to the heart of dharma, that is to please Krishna, all ethical crises can be resolved. And when we resolve it in this way, we can actually experience higher levels of Krishna conscious ecstasy. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupad ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Itai Gaur Premanande. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.